Welcome to another episode of The Exhibitionists. And what an ambitious episode it is, recorded in early May. These are, of course, dark times for the exhibition industry. So we sought out bright lights from the four corners of the earth to help show us the way, pointing us in the rough direction of the onward journey as we politely nod and 5 minutes later forget everything they just said. But that's the beauty of the podcast. I mean, you can just go back and listen to it again and remember where we're all headed. There were six of us on this call, making it very much a case of herding cats across time zones. Whilst Mark Cochrane was enjoying his nightcap in Hong Kong at 10 p.m, Steph was bleary-eyed and blinking into the morning light, illuminating Las Vegas's sadly silenced casinos as she loaded up her first filter coffee of the day. But our connection mostly held its ground over the squillion Zoom calls that were undoubtedly chomping away at our bandwidth, even if at one point Anna disappeared for what seemed like a couple of days. But in amongst all of these savage cuts, there were some great stuff on how each region has been affected by the lockdown, what is being done to open the industry up once again, and what we may be able to see on the other side when it does. And of course, if you hear this in May, there is the obligatory plug for Global Exhibitions Day. Have we ever needed it more? So, without further ado, here we go.
We are here with a bunch of friends from all over the world, and we're going to do a quick round robin of intros, starting with Naji.
Hello, everybody. I'm Naji Al-Haddad. I am the regional manager for the Middle East Africa region for UFI, the Global Association for the Exhibition Industry. I am based out of Abu Dhabi and Dubai, sometimes in the United Arab Emirates, but originally I come from Lebanon.
I'm Ana Maria Arango. I'm the Latin American manager at UFI, and I'm in Bogota, Colombia, and in charge of the continent from Mexico to Brazil.
I'm Mark Cochran, regional manager in Asia for UFI. I'm based in Hong Kong, but originally from Canada.
And I'm Nick Dugdale-Moore, UFI's regional manager in Europe, based in London and from London.
So today we're going to talk about what's happening around the world, because all news is local. And apparently here in the United States, all news is about the clown in charge. So and how great our governors are that are taking the reins in the battle against the virus. But what we're interested in a little bit is if we'll just start real quickly, give us an update about, what it's like where you are. Because the news, at least here, doesn't cover most of the world, unfortunately. So, Raji, why don't we start with you? Why don't we start with you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the situation, like everywhere, we are under lockdown, and there are a lot of restrictions and measures. Some countries are more impacted than others in the region here. It's really strange, like the Levant countries are much less impacted than countries in the Gulf, for example. So let's talk about Jordan, for example. For the seventh day today, they had zero cases.
That's fantastic.
Zero cases. While in, it's great. And I was on the phone with one of UFI members, and he told me on Sunday they're gonna go back 100% to most businesses, but not big events, big gatherings yet, which is amazing. While in the UAE, for example, which is handling the situation extremely well, very well prepared country, but the number of cases have been like over 500 for a week now, or a bit more. So it's strange, one thing I noticed during this crisis is that there are a lot of myths and speculations that came out of it, because no one has an answer to everything. So people started to say that some people have genes that could help them survive or be more immune to the virus. Some say that the O negative blood type, are more immune. So this is something really striking. But eventually, whatever comes from the authorities is what should people follow.
Yeah.
But it's a bit funny also to listen to what some people say: boil some garlic and drink it, you'll not get
coronavirus. Oh my God, really?
Coronavirus.
Good advice.
Oh, wow.
Good advice.
So, nobody will come near you.
So we've heard a lot of these.
Keeps the vampires away.
But yeah, I hope we're starting to pick up again slowly, slowly, but surely. So we started with 30% occupancy in some malls and some offices. So getting back a little bit to normal life.
Mark, what's it like in Hong Kong? Because you guys have been ground, you know, I mean, you're close to ground zero. And you guys were open and then closed. And then what's going on now?
Yeah, I'm happy to report things are good and getting better every day. So we've only had a total of 1,000 cases. We're down to less, about 100 that are hospitalized. No local community transmission in like 3 weeks or more than 3 weeks. And just a few imported cases over the past week or so. So we've haven't had a lockdown. It's just been some things closed, like movie theaters, bars have been closed for 2 weeks, I think. But they're lifting that on Friday. So we're pretty much going back to normal on Friday. And schools will actually reopen for the first time since Chinese New Year, mid-May.
Wow, you must be thrilled with the kids going back to school.
Yeah. Very pleased about that, as are they.
I'm sure. Yeah,
I've worked out my limitations as a teacher myself. I'll be honest with you, that's absolutely not my fault.
Yeah, they're pretty low, I would imagine, right? Yeah, you realize that quickly.
Yeah. Just Nick? Looking down all the time. Anyway, sorry.
So Nick, what about the UK and?
In the UK, we've actually just had some news in the last hour that apparently from Monday they're going to announce they're going to start to ease the restrictions, and also in France, where Ufi's based, I think from Monday as well, they're going to ease restrictions as well. So France, yeah. I mean, France have had it a bit stricter than us. You know, to even go outside, you need to have a kind of printed sheet stating where you're going, etc. In the UK, it's more relied on kind of common sense. But yeah, looking forward to getting back to some sort of normality. But just I can share one important lockdown story, which is I was on a chat last Friday, kind of social chat with industry, a few industry pals, and Steph, you were there.
Yep.
And we compared, you know, we asked everyone to show what they were wearing on their feet. And I can say that during lockdown, 90% of people wear slippers. And John Vandervelt from Informer has got the same slippers as Sophie from Explory.
Wow. Wow.
It was an interesting happy hour. It started at 6 o'clock in the evening in the UK, which was 10 a.m. here. So I had a little morning mimosa kind of a cocktail. I actually had a Madras, but it was a lot of fun hearing about things. And definitely Paris has had a much stronger lockdown than anybody else. You know, it's really bad. Like you could only market near your house. You couldn't go to another market, and they've had no Amazon.
Anna Maria, how are things in Latin America?
Okay. In Colombia, we have postponed the lockdown until the end of the month. It's been, you know, difficult to know how to expect this virus to increase, because although we have decreased the curve, we haven't reached a peak, and we haven't been able to really know how the governments and the health authorities are going to react in this situation. It seems like we're not going to be back to see a similar situation, because it's not going to be regular situation soon, especially for schools, for kids. You know, my kid will go back to school maybe in July or August.
Are all the countries locked down right now? Could you give us maybe a little quick overview? Because it's just, you know,
yes.
Everybody, all news is local apparently these days. So especially here in the U.S. where it's bad anyway on a normal basis.
Oh, yes. All of the countries are in a lockdown, and usually they have arranged the same policies in terms of government support for industries in general. The Mexican government, the federal Mexican government, has taken the virus very in a relaxed way, like, you know, like in some parts of the U.S., like the Trump administration, like at the beginning, denying, you know, what it was going on. And they were the last ones in setting up the lockdown. And this is even worse. They haven't had any support for companies, not only from the exhibition industry, but from any industries, you know, like allowing companies to send their employees to vacations or or giving them this any is, kind I mean, of support.
And this is a particular problem, not so much for the organizers, which you know may have, you know, 120 shows or you know 70 shows or something. This is the biggest problem for the contractors, the supply chain to the exhibition industry, isn't it? Because some of them are just small operations. You know, they're the people who do the furnishings or the tech. You know, the apps that accompany the events. So this is a big problem. These are the companies that need bailouts, I suppose.
Yeah, for all of the stakeholders in the industry. So in Mexico, it's been very chaotic, and the private sector is taking the lead, and they have their hands tied because they need to stay paying their employees and paying all the taxes and everything without any support. That's the most difficult situation to deal with.
That's what I hear. I hear that they are very unhappy with their government. And I've been seeing a lot of, just on Facebook, a lot of really anti-political things. So we'll see. What are we thinking about in terms of globalization? Is it a dirty word these days? Do you think, you know, where do we see things opening up? Is it going to be regional first? I mean, here in the U.S., who knows what's going to happen? I think we're going to be domestic. But what do y'all see in terms of the magic crystal ball that none of us have?
Well, let me answer this first, if you don't mind. From my perspective, no, globalization is not a dirty word. Maybe it has a dirty face because it has multiple faces. Maybe on the supply chain, product, and people movement part, yes, it's gonna be impacted. The globalization, as we know it, in this term, goods exchange and people exchange and movement, yes, will be impacted in the next 1 or 2 years maybe. But obviously, globalization on the knowledge and data exchange side will always be there. So I believe, localization of content will be the title of the next phase. Countries will be looking at localizing many of their content, their production lines, etc. And this will impact also maybe the exhibition industry as well, where we can restart, or the industry can restart with more local exhibitions, with adding international flavor to it bit by bit until the travel restrictions are eased and the cargo restrictions are eased. So definitely that would be the title of the next phase, in my opinion.
It's interesting, Nazi, because Ufi posted a blog by former Reed, Mike Rusbridge and Nick. Mm-hmm. And I know you've worked with Reed quite a bit in the past, but I actually went back to them about a couple of the points in the in the blog, and they wrote back to me earlier this week, yesterday, about the globalization issue. And Mike actually said, "Hey, Anthony, globalization is a dirty word. It's too strong. The word to say globalization is a dirty word is too strong. Global trade will remain a cornerstone of the world economy. But countries, if they have any sense, will learn from this and ensure that they develop their own local expertise and manufacturing capacity in areas they consider to be of national strategic importance. The difficulty and availability of travel will also result in localization, traveling less and shorter distances to trade." So it's that's his take on one of his own points there, Naji, that I got from Mike.
Yeah, and just to jump in, there's two points here. The peak globalization, if you like, which was one of the kind of mega trends that we were talking about last year, is happening regardless of the current situation. You know, and you can see that reflected in our industry by, I guess, you know, the age of the one mega show is dead, and the big organizer have been, you know, moving, whatever you want to call it, glocalizing, geocloning, you know, moving and establishing regional and local shows. So that's a reality regardless of the pandemic. What will that mean now as we open up again? Yeah, of course, we're reliant very much on international travel, not only restrictions being eased, but confidence being there. So if your show is 80%, you know, international exhibitors, visitors, it's, well, who knows, but it will take probably more time for your show to get back online and to get back to the numbers or whatever metric you want to make than, let's say, you know, a regional or a local show. So, I mean, there's two issues there, but yeah, I think when we're looking at opening up, the larger, more international shows will, I guess it'll take more time for them to get back to where they were.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely true in Asia. I mean, if you look at markets like Hong Kong or Singapore, Bangkok, the exhibitions are definitely international, and it's going to take longer for all of the relevant travel restrictions to be lifted. But some of the bigger markets like China, Korea, and Japan, they have enough of a domestic market that they could actually go ahead with pure B2B exhibitions that are domestic. So it'll be a mixed bag over here.
What do you think? You know, it's really hard, obviously, with the crystal balls that we don't have. You know, what I think that, you know, I do agree with that article in that our events need to be compelling versus nice to attend. Have you seen anything interesting from anybody in all of the readings and the conversations you're having with people about trying to really focus in on the attendee experience and making them not only feel safe, but really feel like they need to be there? Or is everybody still just reeling from, we don't know when we're going to be doing these events again?
Well, from let me explain from my observations. I don't think yet we have put the customer experience or maybe let me talk from, you know, the governments and the venues and even event organizers are not yet didn't yet fully put the customer experience in place. Yes, definitely the customer or the visitor and exhibitor well-being and hygiene and health and safety is the utmost of utmost importance to the organizers, but the experience, the journey itself, we are not yet yet sure. We are not sure whether the visitors and exhibitors will receive those measures that the venues will put in place to help, you know, to give them a safe environment. We're not sure yet if they will accept it or how they will receive it. Will they receive it easily, quickly? They will wait. They will say, no, let me see others what they will do. Let me wait until other colleagues go to exhibitions. And when they come back, I ask them. So we're not sure yet about it. But what is definite is that the industry itself is working very hard, you know, to bring exhibitions back in a safe and healthy environment. So I think for the future, yeah, talking about, you know, having a compelling reason for people to travel and attend an event, this is a big thing in my opinion. And yes, event organizers need to look at what is this compelling reason for people to consider their shows a must attend event, especially those who need to travel and book a hotel money to attend.
Yep.
On your framework that you just released, I haven't been had time to go through it in any particular length.
Oh, and works let's with just, let's on just it. Do a plug that it's available on the UFI website if anybody wants to read it.
Yes, as of now. And we want you to read this. I think it's that there's an endorsement involved where we can get it, where if you can get it. But Nick, is that focused? Is the framework mostly focused on the short, medium, or long term? I mean, how is it?
No, this is for right now. So look, where we are right now, and the recording date is early May. Almost everybody in the industry is looking now forward to when we can reopen, how we can reopen, what the conditions we'll be operating under. And people were publishing recommendations, guidelines, measures from organizer side, venue side, association side, and service contractor side. So a couple of weeks ago, we basically took this all together, collated it, and to be honest, 90% of it was the same because it's mostly common sense, and put it together into this framework, together with the lobbying and advocacy messages aimed at policymakers and politicians for why exhibitions... Well, firstly, that they can confidently recommend that exhibitions be opened again. And the reasons are that we're firstly different to other types of large events, you know, or mass gatherings. You know, we're not like a football match or soccer match. We are not like a Justin Bieber concert. You know, a B2B trade.
And to specifically, to be specific about that, you're able to micromanage to a greater deal. You're able to do crowd flow in a way that you can't at a festival, for example.
We already have crowd flow. If you want us to do it, you know, per square meter density, like a B&Q, you know, or a retail outlet, we can do that. We already have apps that track people and visitor flow. We already, you know, we have the tools there. But
Nick, from your conversations, though, sorry, from your conversations with the people, that because to make this work, the traction element has to be the conversations with the regulators, the people who give you effectively the key to the doors of the venues. Are you actually having any, is there any fear that you're going to get ahead of the curve there? So you may be looking to influence regulators on regulations that don't yet exist. I mean, they're still scrambling about as much as we are, looking for the result. Are you finding any feedback coming from local governments, or the venues finding feedback coming up from local government that makes you feel there's a receptive audience already for this sort of framework?
Well, look, UFI doesn't have national offices. We don't lobby at a national level. And ultimately, this is where all these messages are delivered. We have nearly 60 associations, both national and regional, around the world, you know, and them alongside our members are the ones that deliver the message. So here in the UK, you know, the AEO, the AEV and ESSA do a great job. They're already in contact with government a lot. But what we can do at the global level is to provide a support, but we can provide the economic impact data and other data, and we can help argue that, exhibitions must be prioritized because they are the fastest of fast track to get the economy back on track. You know, all of our economies have taken an absolute hammering. You know, an exhibitions isn't just measuring heads and beds. You know, I don't want to speak badly of any other type of live event like the concert or the football match. And those are very important for different reasons and economically. But exhibitions, as we know from the industry, they have a much, much bigger impact because they represent the industries that they serve. So how do you get the textile industry in your country back on track, the automotive, the fashion, the whatever? You need to give those SMEs the opportunity to meet and to connect and rebuild their industries again, because their order books are totally empty. And the best way to do that, and the fastest way, is exhibitions. So we have to be prioritized. We cannot be at the back of the queue. We were the first ones, like Mobile World Congress was very high profile. We were the first ones to be shut down. We cannot afford to be last.
Have you seen in the couple of months now, that two or three months that have unfolded since COVID broke out, have you seen any particularly innovative solutions? Have you seen of any, any online events, or have you seen any movement towards holding an event next year in a slightly different format or anything like that?
Yes. And I've been very happy to see this again. I'm surprised because I think that the region has react very fast. For instance, in Colombia, you know, in Corferias, which is a major player here, they have already developed two virtual shows, the book show, and in places like Costa Rica and Guatemala, which, you know, the level of development in their countries of the exhibition industry is a little bit lower, they have already done these virtual shows. So this is a great move. And I see some more in Mexico, the Trianguis.
The big tourist, yes.
Which
the
is
big
an
tourist
important show.
Trianguis.
Yeah, the big tourist show, Trianguis, they also did it virtually. They're doing it virtually. So I'm surprised. And you know that from the last piece of research that UFI conducted last year, so we found out that only a small percentage of companies, even organizers or venues or service providers, were fully digitalized or fully developing digital products. So now with this crisis, they have moved fast, and now we're seeing the results.
That's wonderful
so
news.
That's great.
That's wonderful news. I do believe that we are going forward, we're going to have hybrid events. There's going to be components that are going to be, at least as far as the education goes, because here in the U.S. at least, all the trade shows have educational components, because we're still mostly association-owned here in the U.S. But I think we will see some kind of a hybrid become the normal in terms of having different audiences. As travel restrictions ease, it probably won't be as important. But right now, I mean, I haven't seen anything that, you know, replicates a trade show floor in any kind of a meaningful way. I don't know. Have you guys seen anything?
I bet you've listened to countless webinars about it. This is the point. You know, there was so much talk about it, but I still get the impression that the model that we're going to, you know, the exhibition, if you believe in things, you know, like Mike's comments and the comments of all of us here, that it will be irrevocably changed, then it would still be interesting to see what form that may be. People aren't even... haven't even had one compelling argument for the hybrid model. It's just two words. It doesn't actually mean anything.
Exactly.
I'd be interested to know whether people can actually, you know, I can't help but think when the airline's prices drop again and everything flies back, we're going to be back to the same model we are in now, except with a slightly glitzier online component. I can't actually see the tangible connection between the online and the physical.
Yeah, I think things are going to change less than people think they will, because people are always feel that way when you're in the middle of a crisis. But then once it passes, it's pretty easy to revert back to old habits. And it's not to say that it'll go back exactly the same, but it may largely go back.
I totally agree. Yes. And look, I misspoke earlier. Just saying we have serious problems in the industry and serious things we need to look at ourselves and need to fix. And this is in the good times. And in addition to that, you know, it's really hard to prove the ROI and efficiency. And this is, again, one of our failings that we've done for ages, and we really need to look at that. But still, and I agree, events will become more hybrid. The content side is, as Steph mentioned, really easy to do. And if you have a conference of even 60,000 people, you can do that virtually, for sure. But as also Steph said, to replicate a trade show, the booths on the floor, for a visitor to be go around to have product demos live, you know, the five senses to feel, to touch, to smell, you know, these are all the things that we've been talking about. You can't replicate that. And you know, people thought with same with baseball when it went on TV, they fought it. People thought with look at the Premiership football, you know, does the fact that it has a global audience of a billion or whatever, does that mean that, you know, people don't want to go to Old Trafford? No, quite the opposite. You know, I think whatever type of live event, even if you have a million people beaming in around the world, that will make those 10,000 people in the room, that will put a premium on that. So I think you can never, the more digital and virtual the world goes, the higher the premium on real live face-to-face events of any description will be.
And this follows on from that. I find this interesting. Where you talk about the introduction of online elements, you tend to invite in a degree of measurability, which doesn't, typically exhibitions are really hard to get a good ROI on, aren't they? People take marketing budgets from their company and they put it into attending an event, and it's quite difficult to work out. You know, it's historically been a very difficult element of an exhibition to promote is the ROI. But especially in a world where there's measurement of online marketing, if you look at it purely as live marketing. But the thing that's particularly interesting, I think, about this is that as you bring more of that in, and dare I say it, if some of the weaker shows don't make it back from this crisis, you may see an overall improving of the exhibition medium. People may actually say, well, look, if these are the ones that survive, the ones that are must attends, if you believe that that will be the case, then the weaker shows and the ones where you can't work out why it is you didn't come back with the leads you wanted, that they may not survive and the overall reputation of the industry may improve. Do you think
I think
an argument for that?
Sorry, Stephanie. I was going to say in Asia, that's definitely going to be true. There's going to be a flight to quality, right? And everybody's hurting across every sector, and that includes the exhibitors and visitors. So they're going to go to the highest quality shows for that cover each you know, each theme, each sector, each industry. So you're going to see a lot of those second, third, and fourth level events disappear, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with all of you in terms of the ROI. I don't think that we're teaching our clients, our stakeholders, how to figure it out. And we're not placing enough of an emphasis on it. Having been to the exhibitor show that Nick referenced, Randall Hacker speaking on the webinar yesterday, there are a lot of ways. I've talked with exhibitors, especially the corporate, who are very, very serious about how they track their ROI, and they can do it down to the penny. The thing is that the average small and medium business that's coming in and having, as you said, 9 or 18 or 27 meters, we have to teach them how to do it. We have to really step up the exhibitor education, because the other thing in the previous studies that have been done by UFI and Explori they've found a real direct correlation between exhibitor education and a positive NPS score, right? A net promoter score. So I think that that's beholden on the entire industry to streamline it and make it better and to teach people how to figure that out. And I think that's one of those things that we really need to start doing better.
As you mentioned, look, many are doing that already. Some aren't. And look, to their detriment, there are a lot of tools for, you know, there are a lot of companies doing great stuff around matchmaking now, which can obviously use, you know, AI to kind of pull up in an intelligent way, which we can see in the future in a hybrid event can help you have prearranged meetings, or now we're all such Zoom adepts, we can have prearranged Zooms. You know, you could have 20, 30 Zooms the week before, you know, you head out to the trade show rather than people kind of get there and start flicking through the catalog. I mean, look, to go back to what Darwin said, it's not the strongest or the fittest that survive, it's the most adaptable to change. So, you know, I guess...
Ooh, wow. quote of the day. No, it's true.
I like that. I like flight to quality as well. It's a great line.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I would like to add the point here that quality over quantity should be now more and more, you know, highlighted. Even event organizers, let's be real. Even event organizers love to take pictures of crowded registration queues, crowded aisles, etc., and put them in their post-show report and promote the next edition of their events. But now I don't think this should be at all the obsession. As Nick said, AI will play a great role in matchmaking people before the coming to the actual event. And this is what should be promoted. To your point, Stephanie, is not only helping educating exhibitors how to measure the ROI, but first educate them how to make the best out of their participation. I've seen a lot, I've dealt with a lot of companies whom my team begged to use the matchmaking program we had, and it was offered for free, totally free of charge, and some companies didn't take it. And in the surveys,
I know, unbelievable, right?
Use the matchmaking had 30%, it's not a small percentage, 30% better ROI compared to those who didn't use it. And why they didn't use it? Just because they are somehow lazy. So now it's more and more important for event organizers to educate companies how to make the best out of their participation. It's not only the booth and carpet rolling. No, this is not what exhibitions are about. They are about making connections, creating leads, and, you know, following up on them for the future.
I think...
And you'd hope that's something facilitated by the smaller events as well. You may get a little bit more time with the organizers.
And the other thing to Nick's point, and I'm interested in what y'all think about it, but to Nick's point, we also have to better educate our attendees on what to expect with the experience and help them see the ROI for getting on a plane, going to a hotel, dealing with everything, and spending money on shopping. Mm-hmm. We need to teach them how to maximize their ROI for being there as well.
Well, if you believe in the idea that if it comes from the market up, then they may be telling us what it is they want to see, and we'll be building the future model of the show around what their expectations are. As Nick had said, you know, you can have a Zoom meeting before the event itself. You can do a great deal more than you ever could before you walk in the door. Well, obviously, shows don't tend to be transactional these days, but, you know, what are you actually going to get from the visitor journey? I mean, it's to be replotted at every stage for every industry. So it's going to be very interesting to see what comes back at the organizers. And the best leaders are the ones that listen to the markets, not the...
There isn't one size fits all. Not everyone will even have the recourse to have a kind of hybrid event, you know. But ultimately, whatever size of your show, whatever your audience, even if it's a B2C show, you know, those organizers are the ones that are... You know, they care passionately about their customers, their visitors and exhibitors, and they give them what they want, whatever that looks like. So, I mean, there's a couple I'm thinking of that do go the extra mile for their visitors, and in terms of sustainability and in terms of a really, really, really customer-centric and inclusive event, you know, I don't think for them, virtual hybrids, I don't think that's going to affect them much. You know, just keep doing what they do. So, you know, those that doing it the right way, I think we'll be fine, whatever that looks like.
Let's talk about Global Exhibitions Day. It's coming up next month. It's coming up on what, June 4th? June 3rd? June 3rd. Wednesday? The first Wednesday of June.
Wednesday.
What kinds of activities are you hearing about so far, or have you heard about anybody planning?
So the theme, there's a single theme this year, which is about rebuilding and reconnecting, because we need our exhibitions to be open again as soon as possible to be able to rebuild our communities, our businesses, our companies, our economies. So we really encourage everybody listening to please get involved. You go to oofy.org/GED. Hopefully you'll be seeing the various announcements coming out there. And one of the things we'd like to encourage, if you're an organizer or even a venue, is to get the stories, to showcase the stories from our exhibitors. So, for example, we learned that, you know, Dyson launched the vacuum cleaner at this show, or Microsoft was launched at that show, or some of the stories we had from the PGA merch show this week on how, you know, the opportunities that an exhibitor can get at a trade show transforms their business. So we're really trying to showcase the exhibitor side and to highlight the economic impact of exhibitions and how we have to get them going again to reconnect and rebuild our economies.
One of my stories that I think would back up, well, it's not my story in particular, but I think another good story to help add ammunition for that is companies that have actually moved their base of operation or having a satellite office to a place where the biggest leading trade show in that market exists. For example, in Hong Kong, the jewellery firms have moved to Hong Kong purely because every September and, well, you know, every autumn and spring they have the biggest jewellery show in the world there. It'd be quite nice to hear from those companies that have set up around that. They have the entire market come towards them. Why not put an office there?
About, you know, the biggest and the best and Hong Kong or any other market. You know, Steph's in Las Vegas, you know, the number one trade show destination in the world. You know, so it's not just about Las Vegas or Hong Kong or Shanghai. It's at every level, in every country, you know, in every community and industry. Small and big, you know, exhibitions are crucial for helping those companies grow their businesses, get to the next level. You know, and we have to get them face to face and meeting again as soon as possible.
I have received many, many emails saying that they want to participate in the activity that UFI is planning around the world. You know, we have been asking companies to send us the information on how their exhibitions have been the best a scenario or platform to develop their industries. So they will send me examples of, you know, the economic impact their shows had or any product launches or anything like that. So we will be aligned with the global strategy. And seriously, I've been very happy because I received yesterday at least 100 emails saying that they all want to be part of it. And I told them that this is the only way that we will have more tools to do lobbying with our governments, because if we are able to create a map of all of these exhibitions, the power of them, that will be our best weapon with the governments, and we will be able to.
And you already have something in place, the exhibitions framework that UFI's put together. Is this a tool that do you think will be effective in Latin America?
Definitely. It happened the same. It happened very quickly. Yesterday, I got a call from many people saying that they wanted to have it in Spanish. So we translated and we sent it yesterday to all of these companies. And of course, it needs to be adapted somehow to the regional situation. Because, for instance, you know that in Latin America, we also develop exhibitions in different venues or places that were not specifically built for exhibitions. So we sometimes develop shows in malls or in open scenarios or arenas. So we need to also adapt the framework. And now it's great that they have it in Spanish. So there is no excuse for them to you know, take the recommendations.
I think it's absolutely awesome. And that you were able to move it over into Spanish so quickly. that it's good. It's really good to see, and especially because Mexico and Latin America, there are so many non-traditional arenas and places that are used and adapted for expos. All right. Well, with that, we want to thank everybody for joining us on this very special UFI Regional Manager episode of the Exhibitionists.
Thank you, guys. I love being here with you, and thanks, I hope Emma. To see you soon.
All right. Thanks, bye. Guys. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, it was wonderful to hear from all of them. Our thanks go to Anna, Naji, Nick, and Mark for their contribution to this podcast, and we wish them the best of luck and may everything come good in their regions soon enough. But from us, that's all. Please share this with your friends. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you'd like to hear, and stay safe, and we'll hear from you all again soon.